And welcome back to In Focus. Brady Bowman with you, 938 on this Wednesday morning. Any questions, comments, concerns, 75-537-1350. Here with Dr. Nate Burkhead, the Assistant Professor of Political Science at K-State. And we had a phone call over break. Caller, you are on In Focus.
Yes, sir, Dr. Burkhead. It seems to me like, the government's always wanting more money. And one of my observations has been that, you don't really respect anything if you don't earn it. Well, these clowns aren't earning any of it. Maybe we are. We're the ones spending the money. So that's one of the problems. And I can tell you this, it seems to me like I don't give a damn how much money goes in. They're going to need more money. They're always going to need more money. You know what I mean? So anyway, that's kind of my observation. So.
Yeah, thanks. I think that you're absolutely right. Is that, and one of the most important things to kind of get back to is that it's an abstract concept, right? These are hard sort of, once we start talking about federal budgets and like the trillions of dollars, it just gets kind of mind-boggling, right? And your eyes kind of roll back in the back of your head. And it's just the basic way that we understand budgets, the basic way that we understand my paycheck is this, my rent is this, my car payment is this. That doesn't translate, that doesn't scale up to that, to the federal budget level. And then because of that, that's the only frame of reference that we really have for understanding budgets. Then it just becomes really hard to understand what that money is, what that money goes to, and sort of how to generate more and the costs of cutting that spending, right? Or the costs of generating more revenue. And I think that that's something that I think that, I as a professor probably need to do a better job with my students, is trying to teach them what the federal budget goes to, where it comes from, and then sort of who benefits from this. A huge amount of the money that we get goes right to the military, and we spend more on the military than the next five countries combined. But that's that's something that we think is really, really important. And living right here next to Fort Riley, I've become I'm an Air Force kid myself, and I'm friends with tons and tons of soldiers as well. And I couldn't agree more. That's a decision we decided to make as a country, and I think it's correct. The other big areas that revenue go to are Social Security, so helping make sure that our elderly are sort of have minimum standard of living, and then Medicare, so again paying for the health care for the elderly, right? Like those are the three biggest budget priorities that we have, and if you ask me if I want to cut any of those, I have a really hard time looking somebody's grandma in the eye, or looking a soldier in the eye, or looking anything like that, and saying I think we need less of you. And I'm not alone there. I'm not trying to sort of lift myself up in any of that, right? But that's ultimately that's where we have to kind of come down, and that's why I think scaling up from my house budget idea to a national budget idea, I think that scaling from one to the other is really so hard, it's almost impossible to do.
It is very tough. And in this previous segment, we were talking about the healthcare in the country and the hurdles there and the hurdles for the GOP in a lot of ways for what they're trying to do and trying to improve it and basically trying to do something different so they can show that they're doing something different than Obamacare, because they campaigned so much for years ever since 2010.
Yep.
Exactly. And you look at some of the things, and we were talking over break on why that is so hard. And I think we kind of agreed on a lot of things where there's parts of Obamacare that people do like.
Absolutely.
Across the board, no matter what letter you have in front of your name when you go to vote, there's a lot of things that you like as far as some of those basic standards of care when it comes to pre-existing conditions, when it comes to having your kids on your plan till 26.
That's right. Yeah, the essential health benefits, right?
Right.
Having just well checkups covered, having maternity care covered. Those are things that are pretty popular, as you say, no matter whether you're Democrat, Independent, or Republican.
And for Republicans to keep that and still kind of do things in the way they want to do as far as not really spending any money on it, seems like two things very hard to bridge.
It's going to be tough to do. I don't envy Mitch McConnell right now. That's a tough job. People have often said that Senate majority leaders, the House majority leaders, the speakers of the House, the job is more or less to herd cats. And I think that's about right. Not a lot of orderly stuff, and everybody's kind of marching to the beat of their own drummer, because ultimately, you know, Senator Portman represents Ohio, right? He doesn't represent the country, right? Senators Moran and Roberts represent Kansas, but they don't represent the country. And so they have to do what's best for their constituents, for their state. One of the real sticking points we're seeing right now in the Senate deliberations is what to do about the Medicaid expansion. Right, so the Affordable Care Act expanded Medicaid, which meant it is easier for the poor to get health insurance. It was up to the states to decide if they wanted to take advantage of that or not. Right here in the state of Kansas, the state legislature just passed a Medicaid expansion bill, but that the governor vetoed. So we as a state have decided not to take advantage of that, but other states have, Kentucky, Ohio, and the rest. And so one of the challenges for senators from Kentucky, one of the challenges for senators from Ohio is to, do I support repealing this Medicaid expansion? Because if by repealing it, then you're pushing it in a conservative direction. As I'm doing that, I'm hurting constituents in my state who used to have health insurance and now they will not anymore. And that's one of the real challenges of repeals, right? One of the real challenges is that once the government policy comes out and people start benefiting from it, you're now threatening to take that away, right? And so that triggers lots of what we call loss aversion, right? People don't want you to take something away from them, right? It's one thing if you deny me from having it in the first place, but if now that I've got it and then you're going to reach into my pocket and take it away, then that becomes a lot, that sort of changes my calculus, right? And it feels a lot more painful. And so what we're finding is that the Medicaid expansion, the essential health benefits, the pre-existing conditions clause that says even if you have cancer, you should be able to get health insurance. You don't have to just go bankrupt for it. Those things are popular. And so what we're finding is, as you said, like there's a push-pull between trying to satisfy the constituents in the states that say Ohio, and also make sure that you still make the base happy. Because remember, as you said, Republicans have campaigned for 6 years on repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. And so to do both is really trying to thread the needle. Again, I don't envy anybody who's trying to come up with an actionable solution that satisfies all those different camps.
And they've been campaigning a lot as far as, for a while, it was just repeal. That's all they kind of campaigned on as far as the GOP platform was just basically repeal. And now they've kind of shifted to repeal and replace, but we're finding that the replacement's been pretty difficult because as far as the things they want to keep, you almost look at it as if, well, that's pretty close to what we have now.
Yeah.
And then they're just kind of stuck in this position of really at the base of it, you're really not changing it that much. So they can't go back on a campaign trail and say that they've really changed it. Even though, like you say, it does benefit some of their constituents. This is difficult if things are just normal across the board, right? If there's no issues in the White House, like we're having issues in the White House and they're not getting a lot of leadership there because of all the distractions that the White House is dealing with at the executive level, that's a tough, tough mission for them.
We set a record. It's now 9:46. We've been on the air, since like 9 o'clock, and we haven't talked about the president yet.
That's true. That's true. Remarkable. I think some balloons are going to fall down or something. Maybe some confetti.
Yeah. So let's wrap up. One more thing about sort of the Affordable Care Act repeal attempts is that we just saw Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst, both senators from Iowa, both basically saying that they can't see a way to push policy too far in the repeal direction. Instead, would like to sort of tinker with what's existing, what's there, and that might be the way forward, right? Because the Affordable Care Act has a lot of problems. All of this coverage about the Affordable Care Act's popularity is not to miss the fact that there's a lot of problems with it. And there's an opportunity that senators have to try to fix those problems and make it work for more people. And when you hear prominent Republican conservative senators like Grassley and Ernst sort of supporting something like that, that may be sort of the way that the Senate tries to go. But again, I'm not sure what direction that's going to take sort of the House deliberations as well.
And do you think, just looking at it, do you think that they want, that the GOP wants to get this done before 2018, before those elections? Or do you think maybe they just use it for the campaign? I mean, that's a tough spot that I'm sure they're in.
That's a tough spot. I mean, it's hard to tell constituents, hey, you've given us majorities in both chambers, and you gave us the White House, right? We have unified government control, right? And to be able to still say, no, we weren't able to do this, would be, I think, probably pretty frustrating to a lot of a lot of voters who said, hey, look, I voted you in power to do this one thing and you were unable to do it. Why should I vote for you? And so I think that what you could see in 2018, I think no matter what, you're going to find a real enthusiasm gap between Democrats and Republican voters. I think they would find a lot of Democratic voters turning out to vote and sort of pushing their candidates. And I imagine you'll see just a lot of Republican voters just kind of staying home, right? They're not going to vote for the other party. That's not what we do. I think they're probably just more likely to kind of stay home, and then you'll see a kind of a turnout differential move the other direction.
Let's go ahead and go to this will probably be our last break of the hour. We come back, we'll have more with Dr. Nate Burkhead, Associate Professor of Political Science at K-State.